This is the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast from Advanta IRA, where we show you how to explore investments beyond Wall Street and open your eyes to new options for your portfolio. It's time to take control and give yourself the freedom to choose where you invest your money.
Welcome to another edition of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. My name, as always, is Alex Perney, and today we are very pleased to welcome on Kim Daly, the founder of The Daily Coach. And we're going to be diving into a couple interesting topics. This will be a two-part episode, so we'll have some tie-ins to both aspects of it, but it's going to be covering a few interesting and also some very important things for everyone. And I would imagine that you could probably lump both of them into being important, but we're going to be talking about something that, you know, everyone kind of hears about, which is franchises. You see big yellow arches, you see all sorts of different things, and you maybe wonder, well, how could I invest in that? Or what does it look like from a standpoint of doing something like that? They're all not just McDonald's, they're not all just Wendy's. There's a lot of different forms and flavors, no particular pun intended, to these different types of investments. And then a big component of doing anything in life is mindset. Understanding how you can be successful starts with yourself, and it kind of branches off from there. There's no, people aren't necessarily born with the ability to do one thing or the other. You have to understand what kind of goes into doing that and developing that. So between franchising and mindset, we're going to be covering a lot of great topics today, and I would encourage you with any of our episodes to, one, consume them all, but especially with this one, make sure you stick around for both parts. So Kim, thank you very much for being on with us today. We always are looking for new and interesting avenues for the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast, and I think this certainly fits the bill. So if you wouldn't mind, give us a little bit of background on yourself, kind of how you came to be in the position in life that you're currently in, and then we'll kind of dive into the first portion of this, which is franchises.
I love it. Thank you for that introduction, Alex. So, you know, franchising finds people. It's not like you wake up one day and go, oh yeah, like I want to be in franchising. And said nobody ever. But we all kind of like, those of us who end up here, we find ourselves at some fork in the road, looking for diversification, looking for control, passion, freedom, whatever those forks in the roads are. And my life was like that, but a little bit different. I was super young. I answered a classified ad in the newspaper. I was on my way to medical school, but my heart was really, really tired of school. I answered a classified ad in the newspaper for a telemarketing job that happened to be for a franchise company. And this was my first glimpse into franchising. They offered me a full-time job. My dad was like, don't take it. You'll never go to college. You'll never go back to med school. And I was like, oh, of course I'll go back to med school. Just let's take 1 year. Well, my dad was right. He's always right. And, Alex, I found an industry where every day people are living their dreams. It's so invigorating and inspiring, and I just fit right in. So I did what everybody does who initially thinks of owning a business. Well, I'm going to go start my own business from scratch. So I did it the hardest way, the loneliest way, the most expensive way for 5 years before I woke up at 29 years old and said, what am I doing? I know I'm unemployable. I want to own my own business, but I need systems and I need tools and I need people. And I turned back to franchising and everything I had learned right out of college. And here I
think that's a really good place to start. And I think that's probably where a lot of people in, you know, they get involved in franchising, and I'm certain you can alludicate to this a bit, is, you know, they have that entrepreneurial mindset. But the problem with anything in business, especially with the economy that we're in, which is great, but, you know, most everything has been done. And it's kind of a race to see who can do something better. You know, there's going to be finite few amount of people that are going to have that new idea. And if they do, that can execute on it well. So maybe let's kind of go into a little bit of that transition. So you wanted to be in your own, you know, sphere. You wanted to be the boss of yourself, which again, I think is a great idea for a lot of people. But what were some of the things that you ran into? What were some of the biggest roadblocks? And feel free to get into as much detail as to, you know, specifically what that business was or not. But I think the important parts to take away from here are kind of the roadblocks or the issues that you ran into, because whether you're running a CPA firm, you're selling sporting equipment, systems, accounting, scalability, marketing, sales are going to be kind of roadblocks that anyone is going to run into. Again, it doesn't matter if you're selling accounting services or widgets on Amazon, the general constructs of call it business are going to get in the way. So from your own perspective, what were some of the things that kind of, you know, you ran into? And then we'll certainly branch into, you know, how franchising can aim to solve these and go from there.
Yeah, so it's a really good question. The most, I think the biggest struggle I had was when you're an entrepreneur, you are making it up on your own. And there's nobody to ask questions to validate what you're thinking with. It's sort of like, I have to try it and see what's going to happen. And you have to be really willing to fail forward. Now, as a business owner now for 26 years, I think you always have to be learning to fail forward, even in a franchise. Right, where everything is proven. Well, if it's your first time owning a business, it's not proven to you. You have to still step into the unknown and start working it out for yourself. But the idea is that in the franchise, you're buying down that learning curve because people are handing you a package of systems and technology and a clearly defined customer avatar and the ability to, you know, have knowledge of how to go find the right employees to help you and how to market to attract the right customers. And all of that I was making up on my own, and I was successful and I was making money, but it always felt like I was right at the edge of my limit and could I keep going on? And it was like, I had a dot-com company because this was back in the, you know, beginning of the internet as a marketing tool or a tool for businesses. And it was like, chase the big dollars, which how many companies are actually going to get, or back up and say, okay, what am I really doing here? Is this really leading to anything that's fulfilling and satisfying long-term? And that's when I turned back to franchising. So franchising provides people the mentorship. Right? This idea that you're in business for yourself, but not by yourself. You're buying a relationship. And in fact, when I work with my candidates, I'm going to lift your eyes up from what the business does, right? That's looking down to looking up to who's doing the business. Because if the people are not attractive to you and their mentorship and their partnership and their vision, right? The business model should not be attractive to you because the business has to adapt and change and grow with the competition, the market, the economy, all of these things. So we're not buying a business for what the business does. We're buying the franchise for who we're doing business with.
Yeah. And I think it's a good, you know, thing about, you know, going into business with anyone, because at the end of the day, buying into a franchise or doing that is buying it is going into business, whether it's, you know, you're kind of buying that business in a box, which, you know, is kind of a generalized term, which, you know, probably has limited actual application, but as a good, you know, kind of catch-all term, whether, you know, you're trying to develop it yourself or you're buying into an established construct, you know, you're still going into business. So what do you need for that? You need systems, you need accountability, you need workflows, you need all this. And being able to, again, and I like your example of kind of buying down that barrier to entry, you know, whereas you're having to take a lot of, expensive, classes, if you will, on saying, hey, I just took this class in accounting. I learned exactly what not to do in that. And those kind of things, not having to kind of, you know, fail forward, being able to kind of set yourself up as best for success as you can is important. Now, I think it's important to note, maybe kind of let's define who the stuff kind of works well for, because, you know, just like with anything in life, not everyone is going to, you know, want to eat the same thing. We're all not going to want to shop at the same shopping center. We don't all like watching the same movies. So, you know, to say that, you know, franchising is the best for anyone, I think everyone can agree, is, you know, a false statement at fact. But what kind of people do really well with this? Is it just people that are entrepreneurial? Is it just people that hate the 9-to-5? Or is it, again, kind of, is this kind of opportunity so broad that it can really work for so many people? Because honestly, I kind of have it in my mind, but I'd like to hear it from an expert in the field as to who you really think this is best suited for.
Okay, so really great question. And I'm going to first start off by saying you don't need an MBA. You don't need prior business ownership experience to be successful in a franchise. What you do need is a dream and hustle. So you bring the dream and the grit, and the franchisor brings the standard operating procedures and the knowledge and the training. You put that together, and that's what leads to happily ever after in a franchise business. But that's what leads to happily ever after, even if you were training to be an athlete in a sport, right? No matter what you're training to do or trying to do in your life, it all comes down to how bad do you want it and what are you willing to do to get it? So there's this sort of what I call the silent killer in franchising. And no one's really talking about it except Kim Daly. But a lot of people are subconsciously and sometimes consciously thinking it. Like, you, Mr. Franchisor, are going to make me successful. I bought a franchise, so I have everything I need to be successful. And this is where our mindset conversation is going to go, because that's absolutely untrue. So what you are buying, though, is, as we've said, you're buying this idea that you don't have to be out there on your own. So when I was an entrepreneur and I was making things up and I was spending money or investing money, I didn't know what the outcomes were going to be. But if I'm in a very proven franchise, before I spend the money, I'm going to maybe ask, like, have you ever tried this? And how did it go? And better yet, if the franchisor gets a whiff of what I'm doing, they say, hey, stop. We've already tried that. We don't do it that way because of X, Y, and Z. So the uncertainty gets minimized. The risks get minimized. The trial and error gets minimized. All of the things that, when you look at the failure rate in a pure startup world, in the entrepreneurship world, it is said that 90% of startup businesses fail before their fifth anniversary. But that statistic is not owned in franchising. Why? Because the uncertainty is being minimized if you're partnering yourself with good people that have a track record of success that you can really lean into.
Yeah. Do you have any idea what the inherent numbers on that are of, like, let's say, franchisees that are still actively involved in the franchise after, let's say, 5 years? Do you have any kind of gauge on that? What would that kind of number look like?
Yeah. So it's disclosed to you. So the Federal Trade Commission regulates the industry of franchising. It's what sets franchising apart from a biz op, a license, or a distributorship, right? So when you hear all these, like, oh, they pay singers, and, you know, they make these, like, crazy earnings claims. If ever you see an ad running somewhere about make $1 million, like, it's typically not going to be a franchise, because everything that we say and do in franchising is controlled by the Federal Trade Commission. And franchisors cannot make those big earnings claims unless they're making them in their franchise disclosure document, which is the legally binding document. So in this franchise disclosure document, Alex, there's a section dedicated to failure or success, however you want to look at it. But the franchisor is obligated to disclose all of the people that have signed that franchise agreement within a certain number of years, which ones are still open and which ones are not. And by law, before you give the franchisor any money, you're allowed to call any of those, even the ones who have failed out. Now, if you're working with me, I'm going to tell you that those people are under no obligation to call you back. And anyway, why would you want to talk to somebody who it didn't work out for? So that belief will flip to our mindset conversation, leads to this feeling of the franchisor didn't do his job and that person failed. No, That is not the case in my world. So when you're trying to validate how to be successful in a franchise, we're not going to talk to the people that it's not working out for, because if they knew how to make it work out, They would be in a different situation. So we're going to go to the top performing people to see, from the top performing people's perspective, what makes them successful. And that's what we're going to buy.
And that's really interesting, for the fact that that's all disclosed. And we'll circle back to that one. But it's, you know, never good to put the cart before the horse. I think that's great information, but we got to kind of build the foundation of this. Now, let me get down to the question that I kind of written here. Fantastic answer. And I'm always a big nerd for regulations. I'm the one that they normally give the tax law, like, literally, like, the stack of new tax law updates. Like, hey, Alex, read this. And I'm like, hooray, 900 pages of tax law updates, which, you know, there's something for everyone, and that's me.
It's so, better you than me, Alex. It's definitely not Kim Daly.
So, you know, from someone, I think we kind of covered, you know, who might want to be interested in doing this. Now, most people kind of, when they think of franchising, let's kind of, you know, kind of maybe bust a little bit of a myth, you know, and I'm a little bit unique in that I come from a small bit of, well, I shouldn't say that. My dad was in a franchising development business for real estate for the better part of 25 years in his professional career, back when print advertising was king, print advertising and real estate for develop, you know, he was in their franchise development. Sales would go out and sell a franchise. He would go out and develop and help them set up their systems and everything to be successful in their actual franchise of marketing real estate and magazines, which it's an odd concept to even say nowadays, but that's how it was done back then. MLS, for those of you listening, if you're in real estate, used to be a book that was mailed out weekly. It was a big, thick one, like a phone book that realtors would get on a weekly basis. So,
yeah,
to age myself a tad. But
hey,
again,
I entered a classified ad, Alex, so my kids are like, what is that?
Exactly. It's not just a website. It used to come in this odd, like, weird, like, terrible paper that made your fingers feel weird that was dropped at your doorstep every day. So what kind of, you know, people always think, you know, franchise, their mind goes to McDonald's, the Big Golden Arches. Everyone knows that's a franchise. And by extension, probably any fast food for the majority of them are franchises. But there are a ton out there. So, you know, from the and let's not get too far into the mindset, but, you know, the first steps, you know, anyone needs to identify is kind of what business they want to be in. And would you say that's kind of the first step in figuring out, it's like, okay, franchising sounds great. I need to figure out what business I want to be in. Is that, again, kind of the first step in this process, or where would you say kind of the beginning process starts of them saying, okay, franchising makes sense. What do I do from there? And then how do I go out and find it? I mean, is it, you know, franchise people, you know, people in the franchise business like yourself that help to connect those dots? Is it just a website of franchise.com that they go look at? Where do people, you know, it's, you know, Zillow's for real estate. You have, you know, Yelp for restaurants. How do people kind of at least figure out kind of what businesses are out there and how they want to pursue this stuff?
Yeah, there's many different ways to do it, Alex. The most convenient, affordable, efficient way is to use someone like Kim Daly, a franchise consultant who has 22 years of knowledge and relationships that you just get to borrow and lean right into. But you certainly can go to Entrepreneur Magazine, prints the top 500 franchises every year, which gives Kim Daly the big eye roll. Most of those are, the ranking is based off of system-wide sales, which, you know, system-wide sales is one indication of success, but it doesn't mean that franchisees are happy. It doesn't mean, right? Like, so it doesn't indicate like what kind of role owners are playing or what kind of time commitment that takes them or, you know, what challenges lie ahead in that business. So that's one way that people do it. You could go to an expo. There are expos that pop up all over the country and see what kind of franchisors are there. And that's another way. But again, the franchisors on that perspective, the reason they come to us is because instead of going, the good ones, instead of going to the trade shows and not knowing the quantity or more importantly, the quality of the people that are going to walk through on a Saturday, they come to consultants because they can say to Kim Daly, you know, we're looking for people with these skills who have this much money who live in these markets. You find them, bring them to us. If we like them and award them a franchise, we'll pay you a fee. So that's why I'm able to offer this free service to you. And that's how, like, I'm just like the eHarmony of franchising, right? I'm going to get to know you. I have 22 years of relationship and knowledge. I've worked with thousands of companies over the two decades I've been doing this. I know who's who and what's what. I can look at, like, if you come to me and you say, well, I looked at franchising and I looked at these companies and I gather your net worth. But, and if you say, I just wasn't able to make a connection. Sometimes I know right away without even asking you why you didn't like the franchise, why you didn't like the franchise. So if you're, so for example, let's say that you were a CEO, you're a senior manager or director in a company making a couple hundred thousand dollars a year. You have a net worth of one to 3 million. So you're an educated investor, you have great income, and you're looking to buy a franchise to over time replace that income. But let's say you come to me looking at a franchise that has more of a mom and pop dominated feel, like they're looking for owners to roll up their sleeves and get involved. You would never know that when you picked the brand. I would know that because I have the relationships. I wouldn't waste your time on such a company. I would lead you to executive style businesses where you're going to be able to talk to other owners who look and sound just like you. So I cut to the chase on all of that. That's what I do for a living.
Yeah. So a good analogy. And again, I always like to kind of steer this to people that are, again, new to this kind of thing. So what you're saying basically kind of is analogous to a lot of different things out there. And to pick on real estate, because that's why I have the most experience in, there's basically people that act as a realtor in this sense that, you know, go out, they understand the market. Someone comes and says, hey, look, I'd like to do this. They go, okay, great. Tell me about yourself. You know, what is your experience? What you're, you know, like how much money are you looking to spend? What do you qualify for? Go through all the things of getting to know their client and then saying, okay, great. Well, you know, I can see that, you know, these kind of things out there might work for you. Let's take a look at the, you know, let's take a look at the nuts and bolts and see, you know, I think this is going to work for you. Let's go through it. Let's look at it. See if this is a good fit. And then, you know, go forward from there. Now, you mentioned a few things of the kind of, you know, again, an avatar of someone that might talk to you, you know, saying, okay, this person has had C-suite level jobs. They're looking to, you know, no longer be in the C-suite. They're looking to, you know, stand at the top of the mountain and, you know, kind of delegate down. They want to have the C-suite underneath of them. And again, I'm sure you get people from all walks of life, all areas of, you know, everyone from that 1 to 2, 3 million net worth person to, you know, franchises aren't all $1 million. There's, you know, they go all the way down. I'm sure there's a bottom to this stuff, but you know, they're all over the place. So what is a kind of a conversation with someone look like? And then what kind of stuff is provided? You mentioned that the FTC regulates a lot of this stuff, which, you know, I go back and forth on liking a lot of, you know, government involvement. I think at the end of the day, it kind of, you know, both sides of the equation get risen. You know, is it more headache and red tape? Yes. But does it also ultimately help to protect and educate the investor in any market? Also, yes. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But it also provides a good amount of insight. Like you said, you get a big disclosure packet of success, failure, income levels, expense ratios, franchise, what you got to pay these people. So what does a typical conversation look like? So Alex Perney comes off the street and says, hey, Kim Daly, you know what? I'm looking to get involved in franchises. What are some kind of conversations and things that you would ask me to kind of determine, hey, let's figure out what works best for you and then here's some options for you?
Yeah, sounds good. It's a two-part process, but the high-level overview of that is I'm infinitely more interested in your goals. I want to get to know you personally, professionally, and financially and understand what the next 3, 5, 10 years of your life looks like in your ideal scenario. And then how do you want this business to play a role in helping you get there? Meaning, so if you're a real estate investor and you're looking for diversification, how much of your portfolio or your income that you're generating 5 to 10 years from now do you want coming from the business? Like 90% of it, half of it, a third of it, right? So that's what I mean. The more clarity you bring, the easier it is for me to identify the most efficient vehicle to take you on that journey. And that's really all the business is. It's the vehicle driving outcomes. So it doesn't mean that people are not investing in businesses they're passionate about. It just means like we're not buying a hobby, right? Most people are not buying a business to buy a job. You just stay in your job if that's what you're, right? You're trying to create some time freedom. So at the end of the day, does it really have to be the thing you're absolutely passionate about? Yes, you have to believe in the product or the service. You have to feel proud to put your name on it. You have to understand kind of how to position it in the marketplace. And when we come from our own perspective, it does make that easier, but sometimes it makes it harder. It makes you less coachable, right? Because you're not as open-minded to learning. You have to kind of surrender your ego when you step into a franchise and really be humble and willing to follow the franchisor's leadership and their processes. So we don't want you sort of knowing too much, because if you know too much, you're going to buck the system a lot. So the initial conversation is around your goals and your dreams and your finances. What is your net worth? What do you qualify for? And I'm going to educate you on what every franchise business costs. Like you said, Alex, there are franchise businesses that are $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 all in. There are franchise businesses like hotels that are, you know, multi-million dollar investments and 500 shades of gray in between, right? So how do you discern that on your own? You don't. You use someone like me who can very quickly help you get where you want to go. But the biggest thing is going to be making sure that the type of business that you want to own, number one, you qualify for financially, but that also fits within your risk tolerance. Just because you have the money doesn't mean you're comfortable investing the money, right? And that kind of has to do with your personality. It has to do with where you are in your career, right? The older we get, sort of even the most adventurous people start to become a little bit less adventurous because you have less time to make up for a loss. So all of these things factor into our conversation. We talk about the owner that you want to be. Do you want to be driving a sales organization, or do you want to be more like in an HR business where you're leading teams of people who are directly interacting with the customer, right? So how far removed are you? To go back to something you said earlier about the golden arches and everybody thinks franchising is food. So you're going to have to beg me to show you food. I am the number one consultant in the United States of America. That's a true statement. For the last 13 years, I place more people into franchising than any other consultant. And I do not show food. You will beg me to show food. And then even then you won't pick it. Because once I educate you, you realize, oh, you're like, well, why are there so many food franchises? Because the vast majority of people out there don't work with someone like me. They just think that that's all that's available in franchising. There are faster, easier, better ways to make money. I love low investment, low fixed cost, high margin, throw in reoccurring revenue, and you got a home run, right? Like, those are the characteristics that I love, but that doesn't mean they're right for everybody. You know, I also do a fair amount of fixed location businesses, like, you know, if you're into fitness or you're into the wellness movement since COVID, you know, we have a lot of these preventative health medical practices popping up that do IV drip bars, or maybe it's aesthetics, you know, Botox and semaglutide, this, you know, other form of the weight loss drug. So We have franchises in all of these different categories that you may or may not even know exist. But again, I do know they exist. And so we're not going to be hyper-focused on the widget. We're going to be more focused on, hey, do you like a Monday through Friday work week? Or do you like a business that operates 7 days a week? Do you like a professional qualified employee? Or do you like a minimum waged employee? They're all good. They're just used by different investors with different personalities, skill, and time commitment.
No, and that's something I really like to hear from you. And again, I have, you know, be the first one to admit a little bit of an aside that, you know, I don't know what I don't know in this, but just the diversity that is out there in, you know, franchising, to your point of, you know, the health and wellness, you know, segment being a big one. But one of the first podcasts I had on, was with Laura Spaulding, who was the founder of Spaulding Decontamination, those crazy, like, crime scene cleanup videos that you see on YouTube that you don't want to watch, but people always end up doing, you know, it's a franchise business. And she has done amazingly well at, you know, starting something like, granted, she was the founder, but it's a huge franchise on just cleaning up crime scenes and old meth labs and, you know, hoards and stuff. And there is an avenue to make money. I'm not exactly sure what the avatar of the owner of one of those franchises look like, but hey, there's money to be made in it. Exactly. And like they, you know, I can't remember who said it or who attributes this quote, but it's, you know, find the one job that no one else is willing to do and do it better than everyone else that's doing it, and you can make money at it. So, you know, whether that's health and wellness and aesthetics and Botox, or whether that is, I'll let your imagination run wild on what crime scene cleanup can be. But again, there's a wide variety of stuff, and there's a flavor for everyone. So
home services is a really big category. I love the home services space.
Yeah.
You know, you can really differentiate yourself in a lot of these franchises, not necessarily with a big brand name. It's not really essential in that. It's more, what's more essential is the customer service aspect, the follow through, the follow up. Like, it's sort of basic stuff that you think, wow, that's really the differentiator. Like, we have a window washing franchise, you know, that keeps windows clean. So not about cleaning dirty windows. It's a small shift, but 80% of their clients are businesses that have glass. So drive around your community. Where do you see glass? Oh, everywhere, right? So any business out there with glass is a potential customer. And who's cleaning those windows on a regular basis? Maybe it's a mom and pop that says they'll be back and then they never show back up because they go out of business, right? And the guy that founded this business said to me, you know, can we put a man on the moon before we put wheels on a suitcase? Meaning that sometimes the most obvious innovations escape us because we're all thinking so lofty. And he brought some innovation into the squeegee world of window washing that's revolutionizing the way that this particular business grows and delivers to the customer. And so it's like, people might go, oh, window washing franchise. I'm like, yeah, but don't knock it until you get in and you hear how the franchisor positions what they're doing and how they're coming at the customer, what they say to the market, what the competition is saying to the market, and then how that can help you build a successful business. Because in a business like that, if you were telling me I love Monday through Friday, I don't want to work nights, weekends and holidays, okay, window washing would work. If you said I'm open to like kind of a wide labor pool, window washing would work. If you said I love reoccurring revenue, window washing would work in this scenario because it's about B2B sales. I love B2B sales. I want to provide impact in the community. You're definitely providing impact, right? If you have a business customer and you're helping them keep their business looking great, That's an advantage, you know? So there's certain things that you're going to say to me. Maybe you say, I like a simple business. Business ownership is complicated enough. I want simple. well, this is a pretty simple business, right? So but with innovation, this one has innovation. So it's these kind of characteristics that I'm pulling out of you that then I'm matching to my knowledge of what's out there and who's fast growing and, you know, who makes a really good franchisor partner for you. And this particular company, one last thing. Yeah. So if you said, oh, well, this is a pioneering brand, Kim, I'd be like, yes, but it's backed or owned by a parent organization that's been franchising other brands for over 50 or 60 years, including one of their sister brands is called The Lawn Doctor, which pretty much everybody's heard of, right? You've seen the green thumb on the side of the truck. The Lawn Doctor is a pretty big name, about 500 franchisees. And that same parent organization that's franchising The Lawn Doctor is now bringing this window washing along with other franchises. But they have in-house marketing so that they can help you even, finance your marketing spend. You know, they manufacture all their equipment so they can help finance that. So that allows you, the investor, to come with less cash if that's an issue for you and be financed through the franchisor. So that way you can get up and running and cash flowing and then start to grow from there. So these are things that you would never know until you got in there, but I know before you even have a first conversation with them.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point you make, is that there's a lot of avenues to, you know, do this. Franchising is not necessarily just buying like a big, you know, book of, hey, here's how to do the business. Go out and have fun with it. There's a lot of support, whether it's from, again, just the people you can call and ask how to be successful, whether that's, you know, the individual, you know, like yourself, that's consulting you on this, or the actual, you know, certainly the more business related stuff. They have an actual workflow that's built out saying, hey, look, if you need support, here's a number to call. Here's different people you can call. Here's how we're going to try to make you successful in this. Because at the end of the day, a franchisor is, to get the terminology correct, franchisee is the one acquiring and operating. Franchisor is the top down, correct?
Correct.
So the franchisor has a definite vested interest. You know, they're not going to make money if they just take your one time, you know, franchise fee. They want you to be successful to continue to make revenue on this. So they have what I'm kind of taking away from this is that it's nice to have a relationship where two people have a vested interest in the success.
Because when it
comes to doing it on your own, you're really the only person that has a vested interest or really has skin in the game. Granted, if you have employees, they want to have it work well. But if you've ever employed or managed anyone, you can know how well that can work out in a practical sense. Maybe it just doesn't always work out. But in this one, you have, you know, defined one, legal commitments, practical obligations for this whole thing to work well. So I think that's kind of an interesting aspect when coming from the entrepreneurial mindset for people looking to invest in this, is that, you know, while yes, you do get the ability to be your own boss, you also get the ability to be your own boss with a good support network.
Can I add one thing to that, Alex?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all good. And really, like, this whole idea that franchises are awarded, not sold. So the franchisor has to believe that this is a mutually beneficial relationship. Like, just this morning, I was at the gym and I got the text message from the franchisor saying, hey, your candidate is kind of withdrawn. And this is a business that would need the owner to be very, very forward facing. And the franchisor said, look, he might be feeling some fear, because sometimes that makes us withdraw. And so it's not a dead conversation for me, but can you just offer him a little bit of coaching that this is a mutual evaluation process? Meaning, if he doesn't kind of like show up for the moment and present as the person who's going to be the brand ambassador of a brand that needs a brand ambassador, the franchisor may decline the opportunity to award that guy the franchise. And sometimes candidates are like so taken aback when they're not awarded the opportunity, even after we tell them, this is not yours to buy until you've been offered it. You know, and I mean, franchisors want it to work out. Like, if I've teed you up and you're motivated and they want it to work out, right? So you have to kind of do some really dumb things to, you know, to not be awarded the franchise. But I want you to say it, I'll say in this format, since you just brought it up, some people are not awarded the franchise. And when it happens, they say, look, consider it a blessing. They may be saving you a lot of time and money and heartache because they just don't feel like you are the perfect candidate to run their type of business. It doesn't mean that you won't be successful in any business. It just means from their perspective, you're not ready for their business, right? I've certainly taken people who are not awarded in one franchise. I have one particular guy comes to mind who went on to become a very successful franchisee in another franchise after he was declined from the first company, and I had to spend a little bit of time picking his ego up and like propping him back up and saying, come on, let's go again. You have a dream. Let's just try it again. And maybe that experience of not being awarded helped him really find the grit inside of himself to say, I'll show them, because he did. He went off into another franchise and was top performing. So your point is very well taken, and it's 100% true. This has to be a mutually beneficial relationship for both people.
And I think that's probably a good point to make, especially for people coming into this, that they are awarded, not just bought. It's not just, you know, going out and saying, yes, I will buy $50,000 worth of something. It's awarded, which, you know, I think maybe from, and we'll get into mindset again in the second part, but at least kind of from the, you know, person saying, oh, well, I want to do this. I have the money. I otherwise qualify. Why, you know, why would that necessarily be a good thing? At least from my perspective, what I'm taking away from that is that, you know, again, to that, two interested parties wanting this to do well, they have a vested interest in this doing well. If they have, you know, tons of other franchisees and they know the avatar of the people that work well, and they're saying, hey, look, like, you know, it's, this is why we don't think it'll work. That should probably be a good thing for you to say, okay, great. Well, you know, these people think that I would do well in this versus not, because they don't want to bring you in to fail. It's not necessarily anything, you know, disparaging towards you, but you know, if you have someone that truly believes in you and they are awarding you this, you know, investment and, you know, it maybe sounds a little cliche, this opportunity, because, you know, again, you're putting up capital. It's not just saying, hey, congratulations. But, you know, it should make you, you know, I would imagine, feel a little bit better about the position you're putting yourself in, is that, you know, you believe in this, they believe in you. And, you know, if you have those two kind of key factors going in, it should definitely at least set you up as best as possible to be successful.
Exactly.
You know,
and you're not being sold anything
else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Not to interrupt you, but you're not being sold anything, right? The people that you're working with to learn about the franchise are developers of the brand. They are not salespeople, right? And there's a very subtle difference between the two, right? It's not like, hey, we're selling you this used car and you pull it off the lot. Oh, you just bought the lemon, right? This is, you say yes, and now the relationship begins. And so these brand developers are taught how to like sift and discern and find the right people that have what it takes, at least how they show themselves in the initial, you know, in the first 4 to 6 weeks of investigating before the leadership team gets to meet you at the last event, which is called a Meet the Team Day, which is actually where you'll be awarded the opportunity to move forward. So
great.
Yeah, very good conversation.
And as we're kind of getting towards the end of this, a few kind of things I just want to touch on. And again, I always like to, you know, focus on, you know, the best ways to be successful whenever the particular topic is at hand that we're discussing, whether that's franchises, private stock, oil and gas rights, really kind of whatever is being funneled into that. But specifically this, you kind of mentioned in the conversation, took a little bit of a trajectory, but I think it's a good time to ask it, is that, you know, when you're having those conversations with people to determine, you know, what you're going to kind of bring their attention to, that you think that they're going to be most successful at, that you think that is going to be best suited, you know, I'm assuming that, you know, there's again, a big degree of ambiguity, but if the, you know, person that's been a very successful real estate investor, again, picking on real estate, you know, been very successful in real estate, and there's something that they come to you and say, hey, look, I heard this guy's franchising. It's, you know, again, something that is so far removed from real estate that, you know, go, okay, great. You know, you meet all this other criteria, but it's maybe doing something so far away. Or if they're like, hey, like this person's doing something in real estate, I know real estate in and out. Is it, which one do you think people have more issues with? Something that they think they know? Again, like you said, it's way easier to coach someone into something a little bit newer than it is to kind of reinvent someone that's been doing something the same way for 30 years. Or is it kind of a mixture of both, from that person that is doing something too closely related to their initial experience, or something that is just too far out of the, you know, realm of possibility? Or again, is that kind of why having someone like you is important, to bring them to that middle ground of figuring out, hey, look, you know, we have both ends of the bell curve. Let's look in the middle where you're going to be most successful.
I would not play God with your life. I would talk through it like you just talked through it and just be like, look, you got to be open. Because sometimes franchisors, like let's say that you owned a pretty successful plumbing business and you were looking at a franchise, and the franchisor in the plumbing space loved to convert mom and pop plumbing because you already have like relationships and like knowledge and you need a master license of a plumber on your payroll, right? Like that could be a perfect place for you if you're open and coachable to the way that they're going to help you run the business side of it. If you're not, it may not be the right place for you. And oftentimes when people come to me, Alex, they're like, you know, I want to do something totally different. You know, that's why they're coming to me. But when you say someone's in real estate, look, there are businesses that look and feel like real estate plays that have tenants and cash flowing returns like shared office space. That could be an awesome option for someone who understands real estate and tenants. But there's also all these home services. So if you've owned real estate, flipped houses, you have Airbnbs, you know water problems, pretty real business. You know that there are certain things like landscaping or mosquito spraying or home cleaning that has to be done. And so sometimes just your knowledge and awareness of an industry leads me to a whole plethora of options that are ancillary businesses to what you know. So it won't be a conflict of like you, what you know, because you're still learning something new, but it's in the realm of, you know, servicing the real estate, which you also know. Does that make sense?
No, it absolutely does. And, you know, again, it's that kind of conversation. And again, whether that conversation is with someone like yourself or just intrapersonal, I feel like it's important to have to kind of set that realistic expectation and open yourself up to new experiences, whether that's trying the new dish at the restaurant you've always gone to and saying, hey, I really like this, or maybe I don't, but also kind of looking at, hey, what are you experienced in? What also are the ancillary industries to that? Because again, real estate being great, and you mentioned water damage. See this nice wall behind me? Yeah. Water damage. So pretty and painted. Nice texture, right? Anytime I hear people say water damage, it just makes me cringe a little bit because I tell
there's
you,
and there's a lot of money in water mitigation. That's all I'm going to say, Alex.
There's so much money to be made in that. Literally, I'm not even joking. A $4 part on my AC sump pump failed and caused, let's just say there was a comma and several zeros in that number of how much it cost to get that fixed correctly. So
yeah,
again, understanding that
beliefs too, they think I don't know anything about it, or I don't live in like Houston, Texas, where there's hurricanes. There is water damage in properties every single day, no matter where you live. Roofs just wear out, and you get leaks in the roof, or basements flood from failed sump pumps, or you know, just like water finds its way. Maybe you didn't shovel your roof, because I never shoveled my roof ever in my life, and I live in southern New Hampshire. And one time we had an extraordinarily snowy February and I built an ice dam and my kids were small at the time and they were up over our garage, which was kind of like our playroom. And they were like, Mommy, what did you do to the carpet? It's all wet. I was like, I don't know what I did to the carpet. Let me go see. And sure enough, put my hand on the wall. Oop, you could put your fingers right through the sheetrock because the water had found its way into the hole and down the wall and into the carpet. And so now, like you had to make a claim. So like there's so many different ways to make money. And if you immediately jump to, oh, well, that won't work, or because you're going to limit yourself. It's like the fun game that I get to have with everybody to just be like, just stay open, have some fun, let the franchisor set up for you who they are. So like in the massage space, right? We have Elements Therapeutic Massage, we have Massage Envy, and we have Hand and Stone. So they all, at their core, do massage. Well, here's how it goes. Massage Envy is like the Walmart of the deal. Hand and Stone is like the Nordstrom of the deal. That's more of like your daily, high-end spa in a retail setting with facials and other services that Massage Envy doesn't order. And then Elements does the sport stretch and massage. So depending on the customer, right? Like I work out a lot. I prefer Elements because I actually love the stretch with the massage. So it's like how they market to the same person looking for a massage is different. It gives all three franchises a unique customer avatar and a way to draw different people in. You may not think of it like that, but I do because of what I do for a living. And that's what I want to help you see before you prejudge, oh, that won't work, or there's too many, or it's saturated. There's usually no such thing ever to be true. Once you understand who the customer avatar is, and most importantly, how many customers do you need to make the kind of money that you want to make, because you don't need everybody. You need the competition to take your overflow because you won't have room to serve everybody.
And I think that's kind of to make the kind of umbrella point that I want to make, I think that's a good place to end up, at least for this portion of it, is that franchising, and again, feel free to add, you know, something to wrap this up for a closing on this part of it. But the nice thing about franchising is you get to take a little bit of a, you get to take a wholly different approach to business, as opposed to saying, hey, I have this great idea, I think it might work and be successful, as to going out and saying, hey, look, there's all these great ideas that can be successful and there are people that are successful at them. Which one do I feel like I would fit best in, and then go forward from there? And it's an interesting dynamic shift in business to kind of go from like, hey, I have to build this whole empire for myself, to, hey, look, I can still be at the top of, you know, my kingdom, but I can go into an already established system with support to help me be successful and, you know, go forth and, you know, make my mark in life at that point. Again, that's kind of the aspect of this that I like, because so much of what I do in investing and helping clients with what I do is, you know, so much of the first individual of people that have gone out, you know, grindstone, figured it out, done it, and are developing different systems and new things and being successful, which is awesome and really fun to be a part of on my personal side of it. But again, that's not for everyone. And this really kind of offers so many more keys to so many more kingdoms than otherwise would be available to, you know, or I should say that people don't otherwise realize are available to them. And I'll let you kind of end off with anything you want for this segment.
Yeah. Two more things to add to that is the time and the scale. So wealth is created through scale. Just like if you own real estate, it's not going to be about one property, right? It's leveraging your time across multiple properties that builds that high passive cash flow. Well, the same thing in franchising. The wealth is still created through the scale. So as an entrepreneur, you may spend 3 to 5 years just trying to refine and perfect your model. In the same 3 to 5 years, I can take a franchisee and he or she can open 3 to 5 locations, because we're not figuring out anything, right? So the point of owning a business is making money and scaling that. Franchising wins all day long over entrepreneurship. Now, the second characteristic we haven't talked about is the time factor. So if you're an entrepreneur, you are 100%, 1000% in at the ground floor of your business, doing all jobs every day, making it go. You're the inventor. You're all things to all people in your entrepreneurial startup business. In the franchise, you can keep your day job if you're in the right franchise, right? You can come in as a full-time operator, or you can come in as what we call semi-absentee. You may transition from full-time to semi-absentee over time, but it affords you the opportunity to kind of create a bridge from your W-2 world if you want to keep your job and be able to pay your mortgage and your insurance while you're still ramping your business and preparing for full financial freedom in the long term, but you get to keep your job. That is not usually the case in entrepreneurship. Part-time effort equals part-time reward. That is not entirely true in franchising. Now, not every franchise would afford you that part-time position, but again, I know how to lead you right to the right types of options that will support you having that W-2 or having other businesses you run or whatever it is that you do. Maybe you just don't want to be in a business 40 to 60 hours a week. Maybe 15 to 30 hours a week sounds better. Okay. So that's kind of what I would call that, what we call semi-absentee, where you're the CEO working on it, managing and directing a team of people who work in it. So those two things we didn't talk about, but those are two big things to throw in at the end.
And I think, again, just kind of going down to the amount of options that people have, I think is really kind of the key that, you know, I like from this whole aspect, is that there are so many different options out there for people that there is something to, you know, so long as you have the willingness to kind of submit to the process, there are so many options out there for you to be successful in so many different avenues with a support network of, you know, many different avenues to help you achieve that. And with that said, I think that kind of leads us into, again, the submitting to the process is kind of a good maybe lead into mindset and management of that. So thank you, everyone, for being with us for this edition of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. If we didn't allude to it enough throughout the podcast, this is a two-part episode. So please do make sure that you follow up next week for what we are going to be covering, which is going to be mindset and success in mindset, because you can have a desire to do something, but unless you have the ability to execute that, and that is a wholly intrapersonal avenue, which starts with the mind and the body will follow. So again, Kim, we're going to be focusing on that on the second part. So again, everyone, thanks for joining with us, and join us next week for part 2.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. Tune in next week for more investing tips and strategies.
Want to hear more episodes of The Alternative Investing Advantage? Search podcast at AdvantaIRA.com and subscribe.